WTFR. Health will never be the same. You're listening to White Wellness with your host, Tabitha.
Vegetable, the plant fennel produces an anise-flavored white bulb that is delicious both raw and cooked. As a tea herb, you'll enjoy the tiny yellow seeds. So right here, they're saying in this book, it says, Man is not only the subject of the medicine, but contributes with his body to the materia medica. So they eat a little bit of it unfermented, like regular tofu, but that they eat this fermented tofu, which I saw a picture of it. It kind of had a more of a gelatinous texture and a kind of like a darker kind of tan color. Ovulation rates differ by race, as does the frequency of twins. Black women tend to have shorter cycles than white women do. They often produce two eggs in a single cycle.
And now here's your host, Tabitha.
Greetings and good evening, and greetings and good morning. This is Tabitha, and you are listening to White Wellness. Hello, everybody. So for tonight, our first show of December, I have my first guest since I've been over here at WTFR, and I've been on this person's show, I guess, 2 weeks or so ago, and my guest for this evening is the host of News White People Can Use, and that is Mike Sledge. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much for having me on your broadcast.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. This is going to be fun.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
Yeah, so we just kind of didn't really make a plan or anything like that, just kind of going off of some chats from the week, and we've got one clip. That's pretty much our notes for this show.
Perfect, perfect. It'll be a natural discussion. And yes. It's going to be great. I can't wait, Tabitha. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for coming on to the show and being my first official guest.
Wow, I'm the first official guest. That makes me feel special. Thank you.
Yeah, I've really only had a couple of guests, even on my prior shows. I really didn't take that many guests because I just didn't know who to have on my show.
Well, you picked a very safe choice tonight.
Oh, good. Yeah, I know.
Maybe,
I mean,
I
think so. I was on your show already, so I think I can gauge it well.
Okay.
Yeah. So where should we start? What should we start talking about for the evening?
How about the esoteric ways that pornography destroy loving relationships? I think that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, definitely, because it seems like there's, well, not a lot of coverage about that. People know by now that pornography and things like that aren't the healthiest habits, but they don't really know, I guess, what it's doing or what the goal of it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in Aryan natural balance, you need the yin, the yang, the male, the female, the unity of the both sexes in a loving relationship to live out Western civilization, to put forth our best and our brightest. And what pornography does is debase not only the female energy, but the male energy. And it wastes both energies, and it ships them out into a destructive mode, which, in my opinion, is why we are on the decline with birth rates in Western civilization. This is one of the major factors. I think it is true.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And I think now that a lot of the whole dating and mating is so based on release, like the whole Tinder culture, people are just really looking for, you know, that moment, and they'll go on about their business. It's the fast food of sexuality. That's how it kind of seems to me. No one's looking for anything that's long lasting. They just want what they want. And well, that's it.
Yeah, great. I like what you just said, the fast food of sexuality. That's exactly what it is. It is not a loving relationship. It is a debaucherous, vampiristic energy steal from both partners, and it leaves you at the end of the day hungry for more because you did not have a real experience, much like fast food.
Yeah, definitely. It's parasitic. And I think a lot of times people kind of chase the dragon, like that euphemism that's used, I believe, for heroin. Like they may have an experience that's, well, somewhat satiating, but not really like truly like soul satisfying. It's just kind of like fills the caloric need, if you will.
Well, chasing the dragon might be even more healthy than pornography.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like raw opioids before they, you know, have been all pharmaceuticalized. But yeah, I mean, pornography is just, it's so addictive, too. I mean, I've heard these horrible stories of young men, like men and not even, you know, in their teens, yes, like even teenagers, not even really men. And they've, you know, they've been ruined by it. And they just like, they haven't even really developed themselves to date yet. And they've been ruined by it already.
Well, my whole theory on Jewish pornography, because it is run and controlled mm-hmm. by the Jewish industry out of Hollywood and California, mm-hmm. the land of fruits and nuts. It is a totally Jewish-run industry. And my whole theory on it is they've done studies that show that men that watch porno day in and day out suffer from the greatest amount of erectile dysfunction, PE, premature ejaculation. They cannot please their partner. Because mm-hmm. they're overstimulated by watching these ridiculous videos. And that, in a way, being controlled by our enemy, lowers the birth rate. It makes it more hard, no pun intended, folks, less hard.
Yeah, there you go.
For our people to actually have offspring. And one of our biggest problems is... And by the way, Tabitha, I'm not one of these guys that believes that it's just the birth rate. I believe it's quality over quantity. You know what I mean?
Of course.
I mean, yeah. I actually am one of those few that believe I'm not really concerned about the birth rate as much as other people are, because if we are even 0.5%, I mean, look at the Jews. They're like, what, 1-3% of the global population, and they run almost the entire world, Western civilized world. So... it can be done from our race as well. It doesn't mean that you have to just spit out units like some groid or some trailer park track.
Yeah.
You know, quality over quantity. But the Jew porn is a weaponized propaganda piece that does affect, you know, rational sex in our world, and destroys offspring in a healthy way. And it is a major problem.
Yeah, and it just keeps on getting worse and worse and worse, it seems. I mean, you know, pornography has been around for a long time, but the pornography that's around now, especially with the internet at a youngster's fingertips, essentially, they can look at anything, anytime, anywhere. When I was growing up, I mean, it was magazines and VHS, and it was, you know, sticking a butter knife in, you know, your dad's suitcase to get everything out. You know what I mean? Like, or it was like, you know what I mean? Or like jimmying a lock on a door or like a drawer or something like that. Like that's what people were doing in the 90s, at least from what I know from other people. Now it's just a click of a button. So it's right in your face, especially if you have a cell phone.
Well, I have to admit, Tabitha, I have a bad pleasure I like to do. I like to go to indoor groid malls now and go to bookstores that are almost on the verge of going out of business, like Books A Million and Barnes & Noble. Yeah, yeah. And I like to sit at the coffee section of those bookstores and watch Jewish boomers who aren't familiar with Pornhub try to purchase Barely Legal and Hustler magazine and then have to pay for this at the checkout counter to an 18-year-old girl who usually has to use the intercom and go, "We haven't actually scanned one of these in 2 years. Barely Legal. How much is it?" "Oy vey, oh, gewalt. I'll just give you $50. Just put it in the bag." So it is kind of humorous to watch this.
I didn't even know that you could buy that type of stuff at like a bookstore like that. My connotation of buying that is like some seedy magazine store in Penn Station, you know, something like that where it's all the way up on the tippy top shelf and it's wrapped in plastic and probably gathering dust. Like that's the vision that I get of a pornographic magazine.
Oh, well, Jew Pornhub has all the old magazines at the Books A Million and Barnes & Noble at the magazine section, all covered in dust. They're still sealed in that plastic deathbed funeral home wrap. But the Jew boomers, it's funny to get, you know, just go into a Books A Million in an indoor Groid mall, get a cappuccino, and watch the Jew boomers who don't understand, like the Joe Bidens, creepy Joe Biden, who doesn't understand pornography. Oh my God! It's high society. It's Hustler. Oh, let me buy this. Oh, I guess.
Like, and that's tame. That Hustler would be tame considering what's available now. And I know back in the day that Hustler was considered and Penthouse were considered rather risque compared to Playboy because Playboy didn't show what Hustler and the other one Penthouse did. But now that would be pretty tame compared to the stuff that's on the internet now.
Well, you know what's funny is Playboy actually was a legitimate magazine when it came out. It had actually, I'm not going to lie, folks, it had great articles. I'm not going to lie. there were many great, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this cliche before. Buy it for the articles, but it really did. Playboy in the late 60s and early 70s actually was a decent magazine. Now it's just garbage. But, you know, it's all been replaced by Jew Pornhub. By all these degenerate, they don't care about the female body or art anymore. All they care about is anal sex and destroying, mixed black on white sex and all this kind of crap. It's garbage. It's complete degeneracy. And, in the long run, it's destroyed real art, real paintings by real artists that used to show off the female body in a very flattering way, which was real art, you know. But
yeah,
the Jews destroy everything. Jews destroy everything.
They do.
They destroy everything.
They really just kind of muddy it up. I mean, seeing a nude picture or a nude sculpture, like I think of Arno Brecker, who is the favorite sculptor of Hitler, and he did some really fantastic nudes, but they weren't lewd, they weren't pornographic, they weren't degenerate, they were just a celebration of the form, the human form. Of course, this is when people looked good naked. Now a lot of people look like a sack of potatoes without their clothing on. I mean, times have changed, you know?
No, you're right. Yeah. You know, I watch a lot of old movies, like on Hulu and Netflix and other sites. I don't want to promote the sites. They're actually trash. But I like to watch old classic movies. And I'm going to tell you something. Everybody looked better 40, 50 years ago. You know?
They really
look horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, even going back from, like, let's say the 80s or the 90s, like not that long ago, people looked much better. And nobody was had this obsession with food now. Now food is another thing that people have don't know what to do anymore. It's been completely, all this information is, you know, back and forth. Like, do I eat this? Do I not eat this? And they're marketing all this shit. The soil's destroyed. The sky is destroyed. But yeah, people actually used to have physiques. Now people just look like amorphous and they look androgynous. If they're, you know, a humongous blob or a skinny rail, you can't tell if it's a male or a female.
Yeah, back in the day, people used to have physiques. Now they all look like Pajits.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they really look like they're wearing like a sari or something like that. And a lot of those ladies, those like Dravidian ladies that are wearing those traditional dress, like they're humongous because all they're eating is like this really low quality dairy and sugar and like refined grains. And like they probably look worse with the thing off than they do with it on.
Yeah. And like the sad part about that, Tabitha, is the fact that real, going back to the Ayurvedic stuff, the original stuff, the real Buddhism, the real Sanatana Dharma, the true Aryan ways, which have been bastardized, just as Christianity, you know, destroyed paganism, or I hate using that word, but our old ways we had in old European cultures, original Buddhism and Sanatana Dharma was not a vegetarian diet. It was, it had healthy fats and healthy meats in that diet. It was not until it was bastardized and taken over, basically through adjuncts of the World Council of Churches, especially later on down the road. Dalai Lama is a big sellout. Mm-hmm. They brought in this kind of culture to destroy it. The same way the Jews have destroyed healthy sexual relationships through pornography, they have destroyed old Aryan religions through vegan and vegetarianism.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I didn't always know. And that's one of the reasons I was kind of on the fence about the whole meat eating thing for a really long time, especially since I was raised pretty much pescatarian. It was an issue for me. I always wanted to find that eternal truth. But yeah, the old Aryan Vedic texts talk about meat being the most healing food, the best food, the most spiritual food. So there it is. And I also was wondering this. Now, still in India, they hold the cow as sacred, and you know, ghee is sacred, and milk and yogurt. But if the whole cow was sacred, wouldn't they have consumed the entire cow since it was so sacred? So I'm thinking that they cut that out.
Well, actually, going back, I can understand the beef thing in still today, in that beef is actually the hardest meat to digest in the human system. Healthy chicken, fish, and other meats, while game, are easily more digestible than beef. Beef is actually a hard thing to digest. So I actually understand their beef not fitting in with the human body. I actually understand that, by the way. That actually makes sense. But the rest of it is total garbage.
Yeah, you know, I'm wondering if perhaps many years ago it was a more wild beef and it would have been more digestible. Yeah. It's possible, too. I mean, now, you know, it's all completely not wild anymore. Most meat that most people eat is definitely not wild. So maybe if it was wild, it was a lot better.
Absolutely. And I see Shield Maiden in the chat room. I hate Indian food. That is Dravidian food.
Yes, Dravidian food. You know what I sometimes refer to Indian food as? And this is a kind of a crass thing to say. I refer to it as diaper cuisine.
Yeah.
I mean, I like some of the flavors, but like the whole curry thing, I don't like. Like, I like turmeric, and like the dish I recently posted in my Tabby's Tidbits, like that has turmeric and, you know, ginger and things like that. But I don't like curry powder, and I don't like cumin. I don't like cumin at all. It just smells like a cab driver. So,
yeah, it smells like a Pajit cab driver in New York City at 2 a.m. after coming out of the Palladium Club.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, when you mix, you know, non-use of deodorant with heavy spice and racial odor, that's what you get.
God. Oh, you're right about that. I had a friend of mine that was a Pajit back when I was in college, and that guy stunk to high heaven. He would cook all this curry shit. He wouldn't wear deodorant. He was like, I don't wear it because of the aluminum. Well, buy some fucking Toms. Give me a break. Okay, over here. Are you kidding me? Toms of Maine, non-aluminum. Buy it. Put it under your arms. Quit the curry already. You smell like a goddamn crackhead nigger at 3 a.m. on a Saturday, okay? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But it's. I think it's not just their food and their possible lack of hygiene. I think it's just a racial thing, because I was talking about smell and race on one of my old shows, and I remember mentioning in regards to blacks that a black committed a crime at some point somewhere, and a man came back to his house and he said, I know it was a black because I can still smell that it's lingering in here. And they have more sweat glands, so they smell different. So I don't doubt the Dravidians, who are part Australoid, you know, related to the Aboriginals, that they would smell entirely different as well. And then coupled with the cumin and the turmeric, that would be a pretty wild combo.
Oh my God, Tabitha, the reason I don't put on this deodorant is because my pheromones, I am a guru. I'm a guru, and I want my pheromones of curry and cumin and body heat to come off to attract the hot ladies. I want my pheromones, Tabitha. Come on, I'm a guru.
Yeah, are you looking to raise the kundalini of women? Is that what you're looking to do?
No, I'm looking to raise the price of weaves in my Pajit store.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think those guys are that in touch with the whole Kundalini thing. Like, I think sometimes, like, whites will go to India and think that everyone there is really into, you know, all of that kind of like Vedic knowledge. And I don't think that's necessarily the case.
No, they think Kundalini for the most part is an Italian dish at fucking Olive Garden, you know?
Probably.
Like, oh, the Kundalini, I love it. I get Kundalini Parmesan at Olive Garden when I go out with my friend after we shut down the 7-Eleven. It's great. I raised the Kundalini early on.
That place is an embarrassment to Italian people and Italian food. I ate there, I think, twice in my life, the Olive Garden, but it is not good. I don't know why anyone will go to a chain Italian restaurant. I just don't understand.
Well, we used to call it the microwave garden, you know.
Pretty much.
Everything. You know. The Olive Garden is an affront to real Italians like Domino's Pizza is, okay?
Pretty much. You know what, like, I've noticed about the Olive Garden, too? I've noticed that it tends to be a fancy place that mestizos and Asians go for a special occasion meal the way Blacks treat Red Lobster. That's what I've noticed.
Oh, Black Lobster. Black Lobster.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, the Groids love this coconut shrimp at Black Lobster. Are you kidding me?
I know. I like coconut shrimp too, but I usually make it at home.
No, man. Hey, baby. Hey. I heard you was a white women's. I want to take you out on a date, baby. Hey, Tabitha, my name's Leroy. Not Leroy, Leroy. Can I take you out to the Black Lobster for some coconut shrimp?
Only if you buy me Guinness.
If I buy you a Guinness at Black Lobster,
you buy me two Guinnesses, yeah, and let me get the lobster. I'll go with it. I'll go with you. Yeah, that's
now
my rules.
Now we're getting Irish. Shit, damn.
They love that place, though. They really do.
Oh God, it's the Black Lobster. Every time I go there, it's ridiculous. It's I don't go there much. I went there like 3 months ago because I was by myself and I just wanted to, you know, I was like, let me get a Black Lobster. I haven't been there in a while. It was horrible, and I paid like $40 by myself there to eat.
Damn.
Horrible.
It's okay. I don't go there very often, but if I do, I would get the crab meat stuffed flounder with like a baked potato and a salad with no croutons and a Guinness.
Yeah, the Guinness makes the Black Lobster food good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it can.
You got to get drunk to eat there, basically.
Well, they offer all those crazy, like, alcohol combinations, like those massive margaritas, like all that kind of, like, you know, booze you'd get on a cruise, like those sweet and, like, nasty things. And maybe people just like to get shitty on that stuff and then eat the coconut shrimp or the Bloomin' Onion, whatever they offer.
Yup, no, the Bloomin' Onion's at Outback. Sean knows something about that, nigga, but,
oh, that's right, Down Under.
I took my white woman over to Black Lobster. Shit, I got her the Lobsterita. Shit, and some coconut shrimp and them extra cheese biscuits, fool. Damn, I'm getting laid tonight.
I mean, it could be a fancy place for Valentine's Day, too. The way they trump up White Castle here in the States is like a romantic place for Valentine's Day. I mean, Red Lobster sounds more romantic than White Castle.
I'd rather get a White Castle than Red Lobster. I'm not going to lie. Okay.
I don't know about that. I think I'd pick Red Lobster. I mean, nearly neither of them would be on my top list. I'd rather go to like a nice steakhouse or something, or a Japanese restaurant, but yeah, I'd Red Lobster over the White Castle.
Shieldmate says, I got one worse for you. Joe's Crab Shack.
Never been there, but I've seen the commercials back when I used to watch the Talmud Vision. I don't think there's one around me.
Yeah, Joe's Crab Shack. They used to have shirts that you could buy at Joe's Crab Shack. This is totally classy, by the way, Tabitha. It said, I got crabs at Joe's Crab Shack.
Oh, totally classy. That's nasty. Oh, yeah, I'm seeing them now. It's a Houston chain. It originated in Houston. Joe's Crab Shack. Yeah. It's a seafood, casual dining seafood restaurant. Yeah, from Houston, Texas. I don't know if there's any up here.
Joe's Crab Shack, baby.
That's nasty. I mean, people don't even really get crabs anymore anyway, because now everyone's been conditioned to do the shaving of every part of their body. So that's like not even like a thing people get. The crabs are like a 70s thing.
I don't know. I heard the crabs are jumping around the booths at Black Lobster pretty heavily these days.
Probably, especially if you met someone off of Tinder and took them to Black Lobster, right?
Yo, I got my girl from Tinder. She white, you know what I'm saying? But when we went to Black Lobster, my coconut scrimp was tender, fool. It was so tender. But my date was from Tinder, and my food was tender. Yo, give me some more cheese biscuits, nigga. Shit. Sorry, Tabitha. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I guess it's free crabs with lobster dinner, right? If you meet the person from Tinder.
Yo, every Saturday night at Black Lobster, you get free crabs with your Tinder date with the lobster and extra cheese biscuits. Yo, and when you leave, you get a bottle of Nyx anti-lice removal. Not sorry. Anyway.
Probably. I mean, I don't know. I just chain restaurants in general are not places that I tend to go. I just don't really go to those places. I don't really enjoy them. I don't really eat out that much, but if I do, I don't really go to the chain places because, well, they're just not that good.
Yeah, I mean, you're better off eating at home, you know? And
you really are.
Can cook your own stuff. But
yeah, that's a good way to woo a date too, especially to cook them a meal at home, you know, if people are on the dating scene and stuff. What better way to woo a potential mate? Not a friend mate, but a romantic mate, like we say here in the States, than to cook them something or to cook together or take a cooking class.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm so glad I'm not on the dating scene anymore.
Oh my God. Me too. And I'm glad that I'm old enough that I escaped all that Tinder crap of the whole meat market, release dating scene, because that's just not a good look. But that's really what's out there. And now people have to wonder if they're the person they're looking at on all these sites, if it's a woman or if it's a man. I mean, you just don't know anymore. It's horrible.
No, you're right. And but, you know, I don't think I ever could, you know, I haven't been on Facebook in like 5 years. I deleted my Facebook years ago. I hate social media. I don't think I could have done this, even if it was popular when I was coming up as a teen. Because, you know, I always look for women that kind of like, I'm like, can you read? Yes, you can. Can you read right to left? If you tell me you read left to right, I know you're a Jew. I don't want to go out with you.
Pretty much. Or if all you have is takeout menus in your apartment and no cookbooks.
Oh, these days it's like, please go out with me. I'm not Jewish. I'm just a feminist dyslexic. I read left to right. Please don't put me up. Please don't punish me for it. Please. I'm like, okay, I'll think about it. Let me get a 23andMe and make sure that you're not. I want to make sure you're dyslexic and not Jewish. You left to right. That fucking bothers me. I'm just kidding around. But anyway.
But yeah, the dating scene must be must be troubling for a lot of the people who are, you know, looking for someone now. And since everything now is so much internet based, even if they don't meet like on a dating site, you could meet someone on an online site, but not a dating site. That to me still seems a bit more organic. You know, if you meet someone online, but it's not through like a dating mechanism, that seems more organic, still a little synthetic, but more organic than, you know, meeting someone on a site where they're like, yeah, I want someone who's X amount of height, X amount of money, this zodiac sign, stuff like that.
Yeah, the zodiac people bother me. They really do. Have you ever went out on a date with someone that was all into the zodiac? It's like, I'm sorry, I'm a Virgo. I don't mean to be in it. I'm like, you know what? Check, please. Check, please.
It's usually the ladies more than the guys I've found. I mean, mostly women tend to be more zodiac inclined. But I will say from my own experience, certain signs I feel like I have more of a natural affinity to get along with. But it's not just the main sign. It's also like the rising and the moon. But I think of like mates I've had in the past and some of the signs I've gotten along better with based on what sign I am. I think there is some, it works for me. I don't know. There is some truth to, I think it to an extent.
Yeah, you're right, Tab, but there is some truth to it. They always ask me when I used to go on dates, the woman used to ask me, so what sign are you? I would say, my sign is asshole. Okay. I'm sorry. Can you deal with that? I pretty much offend everybody all the way down the fucking zodiac. What are you? Oh, you're a Virgo? Oh, you're going to love me, I tell you. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway.
But yeah, I think there's a point to it. All right, there's our first break. We'll be right back.
Now, an army may be likened to water, for just as flowing water avoids the heights and hastens to the lowlands, so an army should avoid strength and strike weakness. And as water shapes its flow in accordance with the ground, so an army manages its victory in accordance with the situation of the enemy. And as water has no constant form, there are in warfare no constant conditions. Thus, one able to win the victory by modifying his tactics in accordance with the enemy situation may be said to be divine. Of the five elements, water, fire, metal, wood, and earth, none is always predominant. Of the four seasons, none lasts forever. Of the days, some are long and some are short, and the moon waxes and wanes. That is also the law of employing troops.
We are back, and I am talking with the host of News White People Can Use, that is Mike Sledge, and we were just talking about zodiac signs before the commercial break, and I was just thinking to myself about the signs that I get along the best with, and I would say the signs that I think I have the most amount of affinity with would be Aquarius, Sagittarius, and Pisces. So yeah, how about you, Mike?
I agree, because I'm a Pisces.
Okay, that works then. I'm not. I'm a Taurus, but okay.
I'll tell you what, I do not get along with Scorpios at all.
Oh,
at
my
all.
God,
I
yeah.
Can tell you that for me a fact. Either. They are the worst.
I know, I agree. Yeah, and they're very secretive. That's actually the sign that's associated most with sex, too. Like, that's like the, if you look at the whole chart where they're parts of the body, like, that's the one that's most associated with
sex. Well,
they
were very good in bed on top of everything else. That was the big problem. They were great in bed, but they destroyed my life. They took all my money, my house, my clothes, but they were the best in bed, I swear to God.
That tends to be the way they lure them in. I think they weave their web using sexuality. Yeah, that's how they do it.
God, it sounds like Jew.
Yeah, I think honestly, and I've studied this a bit, and we're talking about Western astrology here with the signs, the 12 yeah. signs, or some 13 for some folks, but they definitely are the most Jewy of all the signs based on the personality traits. I would definitely say they're the yarmulkes of the zodiac.
I have to say the Cancers were very nice women. I got along with them very well. But anyway, I don't know. I'm a Pisces. I don't really know. You know, I don't really know if I believe all this stuff, but you know,
it's fun sometimes. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I look back and I think of, the boyfriends that I've had like in the past, and the ones I got along with the best, like just were the signs that I mentioned before. So that, you know, just I kind of had like a,
yeah.
I don't know, just like a natural, like kind of affinity, and friends too, you know, it works that way too. But yeah, those are the ones that I seem to have the most amount of like kinship with.
Yeah. My problem as a Pisces is that I'm too, you know, Pisces are creative, prone to addiction, and are too lazy to deal with problems. That pretty much sums me up.
They're the old soul of the zodiac. They're the ones that kind of like, they have a rich internal world too, I would say, of the Pisces that I know. They're good dreamers. They're good daydreamers. They're old souls.
Like daydream all day. Now, putting it into reality is a different story, Tabitha.
Yeah, they definitely tend to kind of daydream. They like to drink and daydream, from my experience.
That sounds great. That's what I do every day. God, it's... Damn, yeah. Tabitha, you're psychic. You pretty much nailed my life. I drink and daydream every day. And thank God Sean records these shows. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it's just like having things. Would you like to go into that clip that I asked Sean to play? I want a little this little clip that so now vegans are claiming that they have better erections than omnivores or carnivores. So Sean, whenever you're ready, if you could play this clip for us.
Is not public. The Animal Welfare Act only protects about 5% of animals used in labs. The federal law excludes birds, mice, rats, and cold-blooded animals. Eating vegan food can boost erections by nearly 500%, according to a study featured in the documentary The Game Changers. The film dismantles the myth that athletes need meat in order to be at the top of their game. It was produced by Academy Award-winning director James Cameron, as well as Lewis Hamilton, Jackie Chan, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. In the film, three college athletes took part in a study focused on erections. They each wore a pair of rings on their penis, one on the base and one on the tip. The rings track the strength, longevity, and the number of erections they had over two nights. On the first night, they were each fed a meat burrito. On the second, they ate plant-based burritos. The first athlete witnessed a nearly 9% increase in the strength of his erection on the second night, and a 303% increase in the time it lasted for. For the second athlete, results showed a nearly 500% increase in the number of minutes his erection lasted after eating plant-based foods. The third athlete witnessed a 312% increase in the number of minutes his erection lasted. He also witnessed a 13% change in hardness. Former lead delegate of the American Urological Association, Dr. Aaron Spitz, conducted the study. He said, "When I think of a manly man, I think of someone who has strength, endurance, sexual prowess, and fertility." He added, "What the scientific studies are showing is that the more meat men eat, the more quickly they lose their manly manhood." In April 2018, Cameron told the Star newspaper he'd like to give Viagra a run for its money. He said, "I'd love to put Viagra out of business, just by spreading the word on plant-based eating." Coming up, Switzerland elects an animal rights politician.
Okay, so that was the clip. I know. And Sean is saying in the chat, the doctor's name is Dr. Spitz. The guy's name was Aaron Spitz, the lead delegate of the American Urological Association. Basically, when these men were asleep, this Dr. Spitz was measuring their erections while they were asleep. I mean, come on. What the hell?
Let me just say, Tabitha, what does he know? He's Dr. Spitz. The guy doesn't even swallow. Get the fuck out of here.
But yeah, I mean, and you know what? I mean, who knows what the quality of this was? Someone even said on the Twitter account where I found this that they were getting the erections when they ate the vegan burrito because they were dreaming of meat, and that's why they were getting the erections in the first place.
Well, the funny part about it is she is like the narrator of this whole thing cracks me up. She's like this chick. She's like some VSCO girl from Athens. It's like,
yeah.
Oh my God. She's like Sinead. She's like 1488. Like, we contacted Dr. Spitz and like he wouldn't swallow, but he said that he put rings around the cocks of all these guys and they ate beef burritos and their dick was hard. So, you know,
it's crazy. It's ridiculous. Like, I mean, I don't think it's true either, because I mean, I've heard stories of men who ate a lot of soy having a lot of issues with erectile health. So I don't think that's true. And they're saying it's going better. It's better than vegan is better than Viagra is what James Cameron is saying.
James Cameron? Well, yeah. His dick's like the Titanic, right?
Probably.
It's sinking. It's going down. It's going down quick. Oh my God, James Cameron, you got a fucking an award because your dick is sinking so fast, dummy. Your big movie was, and goddamn, will anything bring your dick down more than Celine Dion? If I hear that song again.
I think that'll could be a guy, honestly. I think that could be a tranny, to be honest. I mean, I don't really know, but I mean, it could. But now this James Cameron dude, he's done this movie called The Game Changers, which is the latest piece of vegan propaganda zogwash that they're churning out for people. This new Game Changer film, and they talk about the erections in this film, actually.
Well, you know, I heard his erections are unsinkable. And All you have to do is watch The Game Changer.
Maybe he needs an avatar for his erection.
I love that. Maybe his avatar could be a bottle of Viagra.
Yeah, it's blue like the people in the movie. So,
blue, which actually like that,
that might even be a perversion of the ancient Aryan gods when you think about it. You know, the whole avatar with the blue and even the blue pill for sexual prowess. That could be a whole thing with like also like the Pict people of the Scottish people who were Picts who painted themselves with the woad plant, the heavily tattooed people who were like warriors who I think were of an A negative lineage. Like that could be a perversion of that.
Well, I had an old theory about this, Tabitha, going back years ago, which was that the Smurfs were actually a cartoon symbolic use of the color blue for Krishna. And, yeah, absolutely. So there's something to what you're saying. Absolutely.
And I always thought of Gargamel as a Jew.
Gargamel was a Jew.
Yeah.
Because he was trying. Gargamel the Jew. By the way, he was like a cat Jew. He had the cat, right?
Yes.
He had that weird
treated
cat,
like shit.
Yeah, exactly. So Gargamel, oy vey, he smelled like cream cheese and lox, and he was trying to destroy the Krishna society, the true Aryan society, the blue people, right, who wanted to live in peace, and this evil Jew cat guy wanted to destroy their whole village. Think about it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
No, and another layer of this is the fact that the Smurfs were living in those mushroom houses that look like the Amanita muscaria or the Struferia cubensis, which looks like Santa's outfit, the red and the white.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You nailed it. And, and all this stuff is all in these shows and cartoons. They embedded in there. They know exactly what they're doing. And the sad part is that most people from our race have not been initiated in the esoteric knowledge that we talk about or this kind of thing. And
that's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, you're definitely right about that. A lot of people, they know the exoteric issues if they're, you know, aware of, you know, the things that are going on in the world, like, you know, all the awful stuff from, you know, Zog Fog to usury, but they don't know how this all works in an occult, esoteric, hidden way. And I think that's such an important topic because people sometimes will write that off as like some hippie shit, but it's not hippie shit. It's definitely not.
No, it's not hippie shit at all. It is based on the occult, the true occult, and getting into the chakras. Blue is a very important part of the chakra, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And that fag flag, the rainbow flag, they leave out the indigo color, which is the third eye or the sixth chakra. They leave it out. I think that's deliberate because you'd have to have your third eye closed to engage in sodomy and things like that. I mean,
well, getting back to the Jew music industry, you remember the band in the 90s, Third Eye Blind?
Sure, I do.
Now, their first tour, they opened up for the Rolling Stones. That was no accident. Third Eye Blind is a reference to having your third eye closed or that closed off. And that usually happens. And that is why pornography, getting back to the beginning of the show. Yeah, we joke around on the show, but we're getting serious here for those that want to know. You know, anal sex and degenerate pornography will mess up your lower chakras and you never will be able to experience a true kundalini awakening. That is a fact.
Yeah, absolutely. And they want us to be in this this base cycle of food, water, shelter, sex, and all those things are important and necessary, but they want us to just be in that base area or that, you know, that base arena all the time. They don't want us to rise up. They want us to just function on these kind of you know, just base needs, which are important, but never gets us past, you know, the heart and up to the top. And they don't want us up in the purple area. Definitely not.
No, absolutely not. Because if we were, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now.
Yeah. And they also promote other acts besides sodomy, other non-reproductive acts that are really damaging for the body, really just terribly lewd, and people tend to get addicted to these things because I think they're really looking for like a soul connection. But since that's not really trendy or hip or acceptable, they go for kind of like this hardcore stuff as opposed to like more of a tantric experience.
Yeah, do you remember, Tabitha, back in the 90s, there was the Surgeon General for Bill Clinton, that pervert. The Surgeon General was a black woman, a Sheboon, named Jocelyn Elders, okay? And she tried to promote what she called outer course to the schools at the time. I don't know if you remember this.
I do, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this I don't really know what that's going to do, you know?
Well, it's going to make sure that, and it was promoted mainly, they targeted the outer course agenda to mostly white rural schools, not inner city schools. So, again, it was another way to make sure that we didn't procreate and have higher birth rates. Just thinking about it now.
Yeah, that makes good sense. And they also want people to be doing these other acts and maybe kind of associating it with not a breaking of virginity, perhaps. Like, oh, these things are okay. Like, I knew this girl in high school who was exceedingly promiscuous, but she was touting the fact that she had never actually had intercourse. And she was like, oh, yeah, I never did that, so I'm better than all of you guys. But she was very promiscuous in other domains. So maybe they're trying to push that type of thing onto people as well.
Well, yeah. And it all, and by the way, let me just say this, that procreative forms of sex all come from gay.
Stuff
earlier on that straight white people didn't really engage in, to be honest with you. But anyway, I don't want to get into that whole fucking thing, that whole rabbi hole. It's sick. But,
you're definitely right about that. That's why they promote this stuff. There's a reason why they do. And it shortens your life, too. That's another reason they promote it. And then we wonder why digestive health is worse than ever. Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. But yeah, this gets into the whole thing of why they want to keep, why their whole agenda is aimed at destroying the chakras, aimed at destroying the ability for our people, for the most part, because most of the stuff is targeted to our people. Remember, the third world populations never understood this in the first place. That's why they haven't evolved, and we have, okay? This is very important to understand. So this has been targeted to our race, to our people, and it is to dumb us down and to get us to engage in gay Jew degeneracy. And, I really would like to get into some of the more esoteric stuff that we talked about.
Yeah, for sure. Where would you like to, begin?
Well, I find it interesting that, for instance, the whole vegan diet actually calcifies faster the pineal gland and of the brain and shrinks the brain. And while animal fats were necessary to actually expanding that muscle, that is a muscle. And through the modern diet, it has been calcified, it has been shrunk, and that gets rid of intuition. It gets rid of the ability to see through, chaotic situations, that kind of thing. You know, this is a very important muscle. And, for instance, impulse control. The reason that we were separate from other races for years was because we had great impulse control, you know, and it was because of this gland. Because that gland has shrunk through the diet, it has decreased the IQ level and lowered the impulse control of our own people.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And when you combine a diet like that, which not only calcifies the pineal gland, but calcifies a lot of the body and makes the muscles and the ligaments very inflexible. And then you couple that with just living in a pornographic culture, whether or not someone is utilizing pornography, we're just living in the pornographic culture that we're all kind of like, permeating in. That can really be dastardly for someone's pineal gland. Absolutely. It's atrophied at that point, especially if someone's doing the fluoride toothpaste and, you know, watching the Talmud vision. I remember Bill Hicks saying that Talmud vision was spray paint for the third eye. I never forgot that.
Absolutely, it is. It absolutely is.
Certainly. It really, really,
especially
really
porn.
Is. Oh, because yeah. That's with, like spray paint for every chakra.
Yeah. But more than that, most Jew porn is a fear ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And it can. It has hidden things going on underneath the surface of what you're actually seeing. It has all kinds of underground stuff going on within the video itself. High flash rates, that kind of thing, mixed mm-hmm. with the porn.
Oh, yes.
They do it on purpose. And so what happens is you're absolutely subjected to a ritual that can give you PTSD. And this causes erectile dysfunction and other things. And I'm telling you, this is the main reason why it's put out. And it's put out for free for most
people
on the computer.
Exactly. Yeah. The fact that it's free, and a lot of that has like the whole idea of like utilizing porn has almost like a masochistic feel to it. Even if someone is looking at sadistic material, the whole idea of utilizing pornography is kind of masochistic because it's kind of killing a part of somebody, whether they're conscious of what part is killing, being killed or not. The entire act or aspect of being a pornography addict is masochistic.
Yeah, Tabitha, do you remember a book that came out in the late 80s, early 90s called 60 Second Seduction?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, this was a great book because it goes into what we're talking about. This book was put out by a sociologist and a psychologist. I couldn't remember. One was from Harvard. I think the other was from Oxford. But it broke down how commercial advertising, going back to the Talmud box, the electric Jew, in 60 seconds through commercials, were able to get into your subconscious to get you to buy certain products or to feel certain arousals or to not feel certain arousals, to really control your actual behavior. And they could predict your consumption habits based upon the analytics of the 60-second commercial seduction. And this book is a great book. You can still find it. For those listening, you can go to libraries, 60 Second Seduction, a great book. And they were the first people scientifically to put, like, for instance, Coca-Cola had an ad where they had ice cubes thrown into a glass, and embedded in the ice cube was a girl giving oral sex to a man embedded in the ice cube. That you couldn't see, but your subconscious sees this, even though your eyes don't see it, as it quickly flashes on the 60-second ad, right?
Yeah.
Well, now they've taken this same technology, embedded it in the porn, which makes it even more weaponized. Because now, when you become sexually aroused, your subconscious is opened even more, according to science. And you can absorb even more propaganda and advertising propaganda through the pornography. Because when you become sexually aroused, your mind opens up and you become more able to incur the wrath of more propaganda coming in. So this is a scientific thing. And this is why they made sure they control the pornography industry. Because the pornography industry is more than just the sex thing. It is a way to increase corporate advertising through the subconscious by using porn.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well said. It's not just about it being there for people for sexual purposes. It's also there for marketing and things like that. And to get people into this like trance state and this daze, they want people in a stupor. And pornography is like the heroin of Talmud vision, you know, like, it's hardcore. It's terribly addicting, and it's out there for free. People always have to wonder if something is there for free. Of course, like what is it going to do? And it keeps on getting more hardcore every single year. And, you know, I don't like follow it, like watching it, but it keeps on getting more hardcore. And I think in a way it actually creates addiction and creates fetish, because it creates these stimuli that make people become addicted and aroused for things that normally they would never even think about. But then they kind of are hardwired to kind of want to do it. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason that Pornhub is so important and why they put the porn out for free is because behind the porn, They have contracts with big corporations that embed in the free porn subconscious corporate advertising that you don't even see embedded in that. That's why they're putting it out for free, because they're getting paid through the back door, no pun intended, through corporate advertising, Tabitha. This is the truth.
They really are.
This is the real secret behind. And this is why it is their biggest Jew weapon that we face.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest weapons, and so many people are susceptible for falling under the spell. I mean, not just men, a lot of women have fallen under the spell as well. But I mean, I think it's from what I know, it seems to be a lot of men more than women, but I think it's changing. I think a lot of people are just becoming addicted to this as a medium, because it's like Tinder. It functions as a release-based medium. So why wouldn't anybody, male or female, be addicted to it?
God, Tinder. I've never been on there. I haven't been on Facebook in years. Tabitha, I've been on Facebook for like 3 or 4 years. I don't do any of the social media shit. I hate it. I can't stand it.
You know? I do Twitter. I mean, that's it.
Okay, I do Twitter too, just to promote the shows. That's it.
Same.
So I don't
that's
hang
it
around
for the show. Yeah, I don't really either, because you can get caught in the whole rabbi hole on Twitter, and it's a time suck. Like, I have to say, ever since I was doxxed, by the other network, I have not been using those social medias, but whatever. I don't need to use them. I can get my message across by doing my shows and doing my tidbits and talking to people, you know, in person or online. And I'm pretty effective, actually. I actually had a Thanksgiving chat where I was actually able to, I actually brought up the Hala hoax on Thanksgiving, and it went over rather well. So,
well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
And it went well, huh?
It really did. Most of the people there, most of the audience is familiar with some of the beliefs that I have, but I was talking to someone who's a very right-wing, very pro-Trump guy, rather knowledgeable, doesn't own a Talmud vision, but still kind of like is inundated with a bit of the Talmud vision culture. So I brought up a bunch of these things, and he actually said that he was going to look into it, which was pretty cool. So, and my facts were pretty straightforward. I said what I said in a good way, and I didn't say it like in a nasty, commanding, or hateful way. And I think sometimes coming from a woman, it means a world of difference, because women are supposed to be softer and not supposed to talk about these things sometimes as much. But I really think that he was going to look into it. So.
Well, he probably will, because, you know, I found that a lot of people, you know, a couple years ago, I did some stuff, some radio shows. A lot of people criticized.
Hold that thought. We got our break. Okay, we'll be right back, guys.
Inductive logic, reasoning from specific instances to a general conclusion that is broader than what can be logically inferred from the instances. For example, our observation that the sun rose today, yesterday, and all the days we know about before yesterday gives rise to the conclusion that the sun has always come up and will continue to come up every day, even though this cannot be logically inferred from the known instances. Note, this example will not work for our readers at the North Pole. Contrast, deductive logic. From the book Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar by Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein. In the sunshine of your love. I'm with you, my love. The light shining through.
WTFR.
Take a fool to forget. I saw a ton of bricks that hit me in the head. And watch you do the little baby, I ain't over it yet. Every time I see you make me feel so fine. Heart beating crazy, my blood running wild. Loving make me feel like a mighty, mighty man. Love me, baby, ain't I your man? I'm a love-struck baby. Yeah, I'm a love-struck baby. You got me love-struck baby.
And we are back, and I am talking to Mike Sledge, host of News White People Can Use. And we were just talking a little bit about the hollow hoax and turning people on and awakening them. And what were you saying, Mike, before the break came in?
Well, I wanted to say before that, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best guitar players that ever lived. Stevie Ray Vaughan in Double Trouble, one of my favorites.
That's right.
When he was playing with Double Trouble. His cover of Superstitious is unbelievable, and Caught in the Crossfire, unbelievable as well. You know, as Dennis Leary said in one of his stand-up shows, you know, all the greats die. You know, Stevie Ray Vaughan died in a helicopter crash.
Yeah.
And we can't even get Bon Jovi in a helicopter. we're working on it, folks. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, definitely one of the greatest guitar players for sure. Died at 35. But yeah, for sure. One of my favorites. That's why I included that song. I like that one too, because it's one of the lesser known ones. And it's one of the older ones too. But I like all of his songs.
Yeah, they're all great. They're all great.
Yeah.
He was so, by the way, his brother from the Fabulous Thunderbirds is a great guitar player as well.
Jimmy Vaughan?
Jimmy Vaughan. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. But anyway,
yeah.
Go ahead, Tabitha. I'm sorry.
No, you were saying before the break cut out where I was talking about enlightening a family member about the hollow hoax on Thanksgiving and talking about, you know, just dropping those seeds and just talking about, you know, basically talking to people in person and, you know, not having a social media. Because when I first became like kind of somewhat awakened, I was trying to, you know, tailor and, you know, kind of do what I could on Facebook, you know, without using certain words that would get me, you know, taken off. And the audience there was just so dumb. I remember one time I posted this thing about vaccines and I showed the CDC Center for Disease Control stats from like 1985 to now with the amount of vaccines. And I just got all these retards, these scientism retards who were arguing for the safety, one person saying, oh yeah, I space them and stuff like that. So I pretty much just don't talk about that stuff on Facebook anymore. So I don't really need that. If you talk to people in person, that's the best way to enlighten people, is to talk to them in person and make a connection and meet them where they're at. That's what I try to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say Thanksgiving is the best holiday to talk to people about the hollow hoax because you're using your fucking oven. Sorry. I couldn't help it.
But yeah.
I wrote most of my recipes in a ballpoint pen as I put them in the oven. Seriously.
I typed mine out, but okay.
Oh,
but, yeah.
No, you have to use a ballpoint pen, Tabitha, so you can be like Anne Frank, you know, when you write your recipes. You know,
I know.
Her good recipe from Treblinka when they
exactly.
write them out.
I should
you know?
Use a ballpoint pen for all my recipes and just go back to transcribing them with my hand.
But
what better time to bring up the hollow hoax than the holidays, right? You're going to be around people you don't see all year and you want to get the message out, bring it up, right?
Oh, I'm going to tell them. I want you to come in for a second. I want to tell you something that really did not happen, okay? Now go ahead. I want you to turn the oven to 375, all right? Put on 90 minutes. Now put that turkey in there. Now, that turkey might represent Benjamin Netanyahu, but I'm not saying anything, all right? I'm just telling you. Nah, I'm just kidding. But, no. Yeah, it's a great time to talk about the hollow hoax as you're throwing shit in the oven. But no, it really is, because you got the whole family there. And there, by the go. Way, on my last day, yeah, I told you that we played this trivia game where I learned that, I never knew this, that Ralph Lauren, the founder of Polo, was Ralph Lifshitz. I never knew that before, you know.
Yeah, so. I've actually known that for a bit of time, but I'm not surprised. I think Calvin Klein might be another one of those fellows that gave his name kind of the, you know, the wasping Klein, treatment, you know, if you will.
Klein could go either way. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but he's also one of them. A lot of these fashion people are, actually. Donna Karan, a lot of these, Marc Jacobs, Michael Kors, a lot of these fashion people are triple bracket people.
You know what's really weird is this Kate Spade that killed herself.
Yeah.
Was the cousin, or was that the sister of David Spade, the comic? I think it was the sister.
I don't know if they're related.
Or the sister-in-law, I think. Yeah.
I really don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, that was a weird thing. She died like the same week that Bourdain died, right? Within a couple of days of each other. And she had red scarf like tied around the door handle or something to that effect.
Well, I told her to quit hanging around Hillary Clinton, but she didn't listen. So I guess I'm just kidding around.
Who knows? Fashion's a weird world. It's a weird world. A lot of Jews, a lot of trannies, a lot of homos. Weird world.
But anyway, Tab, go back to what you were talking about. We're getting too early before the break because I think it's important.
Sure. About the Hollow Hoax?
Yeah, that's always important. What I was talking about.
Yeah, so I brought that up, and I mentioned a lot of facts. And I stayed firm. And sometimes when I mention these things to people, I get like a little nervous, to be honest. And I'll like just think like, oh, I just like shot out a bunch of stuff. I'm like, how are they going to react now? But I always say it in a soft way. And the trick that I use, which works fantastic for any other people who are looking to kind of polish up on their activism skills, is cook a wonderful meal. And then just talk about the meal. Talk about where you sourced the ingredients, how you made it. You know, offer leftovers, of course, that's always lovely. And then bring up these topics and people can't resist, because if you've made a wonderful meal and you're very knowledgeable about how you cooked it and how the meat was sourced and how the vegetables were sourced and such, they're going to listen to you when you talk about other stuff. So that's what I do, and it works.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. Make some great food, make them sit down, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
You go, hey.
By the way.
By the way, can I talk to you about the Jews?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, first, white genocide was brought up. My husband brought up that, which was pretty cool. And he started talking about that. And then I said, then the cousin of his started talking about 9/11. And most people are iffy on 9/11. They know something is up. They know something is funny. But then you want to scale it back and say, oh, by the way, and you bring up like Israel, then you bring up Palestine. And I started talking about the Balfour Declaration. And I took it from there. Then I brought up how 17 countries, it's illegal. It's a crime, you know, to mention that the Hollow Hoax and things like that. So I started talking about those things, and he was really absorbed in the conversation. It was fantastic.
Oh, by the way, Tabitha, I got a great tip for talking to people about 9/11.
What's that?
You can just go with the official story that 19 Saudi hijackers did 9/11. I have no problem with that, because the House of Saud was founded by Mordecai Mosh, who was a Jew.
There you go.
And in 1932, then 14 years later, 1946, Israel was founded. And I have no problem with the official story. I say, I agree with the official story. 19 Saudi Jews committed 9/11. I have no problem with that.
There you go. And yeah, those are what they call the Don May.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It blows their mind because, you know, they want to... They think you're going to put out some counter narrative. No, I go with the official narrative. I agree. The Jewish Saudis did 9/11. I have no problem with that. They did it. It was 19. And by the way, it was 19, by the way, the Jewish Freemasonic number of 19 that brought down the Twin Towers of Mordecai Mosh, the Jewish House of Saud. created by the British Yiddish 14 years before Israel. I have no problem with that. We'll go with that. Great. Yeah, you're right. The Jew Saudis committed 9/11. Have no problem with that at all. You're right. There's no reason to have any independent commission. The Jews did it. The Jew Saudis did it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's a nice way to kind of foray into the conversation, for sure, to just do it like that. And then they'll be like, oh, okay, like, he's not one of those conspiracy guys. You know, you just kind of build it like that. But I think people, when you drop the right pieces, and the fellow I was talking to was half Polish, so I pulled out that proverb, that Polish proverb. How does it go again? The Jew strikes you when he's in pain, that one.
Oh, yes. The Jew lashes out at you.
That's
when he's in pain, right?
Yeah, something like that. So I brought that one out, and I talked about, if memory serves correctly, that the Poles built the supposed gas chambers like post-war. So I tried to racially connect.
Well, no
with him.
Wonder they didn't work, right?
Exactly. Exactly. God. Yes.
We had Poles building gas chambers. No wonder they fucking didn't work. God
that's
damn
like,
it. Why did Hitler do that? He should have never outsourced the SS, that fucker.
That's like the Polish man who went into the medicine chest
he
found.
No wonder there are more Jews now than there were before World War II. That fucking idiot. I swear to. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, that's like the Polish man who walked into the medicine chest in the bathroom and he saw his wife's bottle of polish remover and he got freaked out. Polish remover, like nail polish.
Polish remover.
I used to have this sheet of like Polish jokes, and there were two that I remembered. There was that one, and there was another one, which is a pretty crass joke, but I'll tell it because people are going to laugh in the chat. And the joke was, did you hear about the Polish woman who used the vibrator? She chipped her teeth.
On Epstein Island, I think.
On Epstein Island, drinking a margarita. Exactly.
With Jimmy Buffett.
Yes, that's right.
That's a good one.
I know, it is a good one. Oh, by the way, the phrase Sean is telling us, the Jew cries out whilst he strikes, or the Jew cries out in pain while he strikes. I think that's it. That's the phrase I was looking for. But yeah, something to that effect. But I was connecting with this fellow based on his Polish heritage. I always try to connect with people based on how I know them. I want to create that cord. And whenever I'm talking to anyone, I always try to create, whether it's a racial cord or a culinary cord or whatever it is, I'll connect with someone that way, and it works.
So, if anybody didn't get anything from the show, remember, Hitler really messed up. He got the Poles to do the gas chambers. They didn't work, and now we're stuck in this thing. You know what? I'm really pissed off at Hitler. This guy sucked. He was horrible at exterminating Jews. I'm sorry.
Maybe he was eating too much sugar. I don't know. I mean,
he was eating tofurkey, 1488 tofurkey.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I heard that he liked the sweets, and looking at his face, and there's something in like a holistic kind of modality called visual diagnosis, oriental diagnosis, whatever you want to call it. And he looks a little bit like he had a fancy for sweets. And I know like the whole thing about them being vegetarian is one of those things that's kind of pulled around, but I don't necessarily think that's true. Because when I was having a chat with you the other day, you mentioned that Himmler was a chicken farmer.
Yeah, Himmler was actually a chicken farmer. This whole thing that Hitler was a vegan, I don't believe that shit at all. I think that's total bullshit. I think it's told, you know, it's lies, just like the lies that Hitler was all fucked up on methamphetamine, on crystal meth, and
methadone,
pouring it in his eyeballs. And this is baloney. You know, well, which is it? Was he a teetotaler vegetarian, or was he a meth addict garbling down Booger Kang as he was sending Jews to fake Polish-built gas chambers? I mean,
they make up all these things about him. It's horrible. It's just, they make up the fact that he was a hermaphrodite, that he had a microphallus, that him and Eva Braun never consummated. Oh, yeah. They made up they've made up so many things to defame him in a dietary manner, a sexual manner, like a addiction manner. It's horrible.
Yeah, the winners write history. But Jasper
Indeed
Jahwe,
yeah,
the real winners are in Antarctica right now. With Black Pope money stolen from Switzerland through fake Nazi accounts that are being funneled into my radio show. Thanks for listening.
That's right.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, they're just and the Vril women don't cut their hair. There's the Vril women there who have their hair down to their ankles.
Oh, absolutely. It's the best.
I know. I'll be 3 years in May without cutting my hair. My hair is really? Yeah, my hair is I guess it's almost down to my, let's see. I don't know how long it is. It touches my ribs, though. It's that long.
You know, there is power in this, both from the male and the female, going to the esoteric. You know, the reason that when you join the military, they make you shave and cut all your hair off is because it really gets rid of your spiritual energy and your antennas.
Absolutely.
This is a true fact. By the way, this is why the Jew, American History X, the Jew propaganda of what a white
Nazi
nationalist look like is, bagel Nazi skinhead makes you shave off all your hair. Everything they do is done as a weaponized form of propaganda to make you weak so you can't stand up against them. Their rabbis have long beards. Their rabbis don't shave. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. They are playing you. And when you follow their propaganda, you are losing and losing big time.
Absolutely. And that little curly thing that the Hasids have, not the Chabad Hasids, but the non-Chabad Hasids, what they call the peyot, that thing that like is from the temple, that has to do with the second chakra, the crown chakra, the one they block on the fag flag. So they know exactly when they're passing off that Hollywood version of American History X, Romper Stomper, you know, all these kind of like neo-Nazi, bagel Nazi movies. They're doing that because they want us to associate that with being tough and manly and standing up for yourself. When it was, I think, talking about this from a perspective of having bangs, I think when Genghis Khan he conquered China, he made like all the ladies like have their hair in bangs to have a covering of the third eye.
Absolutely. It is absolutely real. And by the way, I saw an interesting movie over the holiday weekend that relates to what we're talking about. You remember Fight Club, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Okay, this was Edward Norton's second film to American History X. And both of these films are related, by the way. They
really?
Are connected. Absolutely, they are connected. So Fight Club basically is the breakdown of... Fight Club is basically a MGTOW movie.
Okay, I could see that.
You need to watch that again. It's a MGTOW movie. Yeah, yeah, it's a MGTOW movie. It's got, he's basically a schizophrenic. Brad Pitt is his alter ego, but he rejects sex into unleashing his sexual aggression on other men, okay, to get the release. But this whole thing is a MGTOW movie. It is unbelievable. But, you know, check it out again. It's worth the check out. And, I might start doing movie shows again. I used to do movie shows where I watched movies and broke them down. It's important.
Yeah, and I know with Fight Club, which I haven't seen in really a long time, there's also some predictive programming with 9/11 in the end, if memory serves correctly. Like when something blows up, him and Helena Bonham Carter are like embracing themselves and something just blows up in the background.
11 buildings blow up, to be exact.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there you go.
There's always predictive programming in these movies because the Saudis run Hollywood, Tabitha. You know
that's
that,
right. That's right.
The
I should Jew buy the
Saudis. He's actually true. We got Dick Force pills on sale for $5.99. The Jew Saudis run Hollywood. So.
Is that a Black Friday discount for me? Can I get 20 or 30 packs or a Black Friday discount?
Well, that would be Black Friday. That is my second host that's sleeping with my ex-wife. We're prepping the bull for that one. But you get a...
But yeah, there's a lot of little seedlings in the movies for sure. And especially with that Fight Club movie, it seems like he starts the movie as kind of like this emaciated, kind of like weak guy. And then he becomes this fighting guy who becomes kind of masculine. But the fact that he's taking out that kind of release while he's beating up men isn't just MGTOW, but it's kind of homoerotic as well.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, going back to American, anyway, fuck all this. Let's go to the next topic.
Yeah. All this Jewy Wood stuff. Forget it, right?
I'm sick of it, Ari.
I know. I prefer the old films, personally. If I am going to take in a movie, I don't take in movies lately. What I actually have been watching lately and just like kind of laughing my ass off is All in the Family. I've been watching some of that on YouTube.
Yes.
I can't believe what they got away with, the words they used on that show. Wow. I heard a line yesterday. I had to rewind 3 times. Have you ever seen the one when the Jeffersons move in next door? You've probably seen that episode, right? I don't know if you have, but like the Jeffersons move next door to like Archie.
Let me tell you something. Norman Lear produced, because I am a All in the Family connoisseur. Okay?
Okay.
Archie Bunker is my favorite character. Okay. He's kind of what I took on to do this radio show. But anyway, because I'm going to tell you why. You take a character the Jews create and you turn it against them. The original intent of Archie Bunker was Norman Lear, the Jew that created this show, created the concept of Archie Bunker as a way of making fun of a middle-class white Protestant.
Exactly.
And to make him look like a buffoon, right? Some
yes.
buffoon sitting in a lazy boy, you know,
stuck
fat.
Stuck in the past.
You know. Yeah, stuck in the yeah. past. But Norman Lear admitted years later that Archie Bunker backfired because white nationalists and white people loved Archie Bunker and they thought Archie Bunker was the greatest part of the show. And that was not the intent of Norman Lear. Norman Lear's intent was to make Archie Bunker look like a total fucking moron, right?
Yeah. And
the
I've
whole
actually
show backfired. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I'm looking at him here. This dude is 97 years old, and here's his Wikipedia picture. He's wearing like the tranny flag like around his neck, like with a tuxedo.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm gonna put this link in the chat right now so everyone can check this out. But yeah, it definitely backfired. And I was watching a couple of episodes yesterday. I was you know cooking and stuff, and I'm seeing black people in the YouTube comments say I love Archie Bunker. You know, like.
No,
people like the reality.
Yeah, this backfired because the original intent was like to do a propaganda show. He thought that he would do the show to satire and to, you know, roast white middle class males, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that meathead, you know, the Jew meathead on the show.
Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner, that fat
yep.
fuck.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the hero along with the Sally Struthers, the bitch that ate all the food that went to Ethiopia. You know,
yep.
you know, she did the whole Ethiopia campaign to feed
she
the starving niggers in Africa.
She was so thin back then, I know.
And she was so thin. And after the campaign, like 10 years later, she ate all the fucking beans and rice going to Ethiopia. She was like 500 fucking pounds. And the Ethiopians were fucking starving.
She took their food.
Yeah, she ate all their food in the warehouses. Anyway.
Pretty much. So,
yeah, Carol O'Connor.
That's
yeah.
right.
So it backfired, you know, and it was the same Norman Lear. He created the Jeffersons, and I think he Good Times was in their show, which was a funny show, by the way.
Makes sense.
I love
yeah, but I think the Jeffersons got their start on All of the Family, because the episode I was watching yesterday was that the person next door sold their house to the Jeffersons. That was like the episode that I was watching. And at first Archie's like, oh, I hope I didn't sell it to Jews. And then he finds that they sell it to blacks and he's even more annoyed with it. And
well,
then, yeah, just ridiculous.
Well, he would have been better off. See, that proves it was a Jew show because he was worried he sold to Jews. Then when he found out he sold to blacks, he got more upset
mm-hmm.
because the Jew owned the show, right? So you see the propaganda here. In reality, you're better off with a nigger neighbor than a Jew because they're not, they're only got an IQ of 85. You can probably get around that. With the Jew owner, there's no telling what's going to happen to you.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. They actually made a hysterical joke on the show I was watching last night, and the Rob Reiner character and the Sally Struther character were like, what's wrong with it? They're like, they're moving up. They should be coming into the neighborhood. And then there was some joke about watermelon, and Sally Struthers was like, I think it will be wondrous that they move next door. And then Archie's like, it's not going to be wondrous when they're throwing watermelon out the window or something like that.
Well, you know what my favorite Archie Bunker episode was and All in the Family was? Archie Bunker goes to vote. This is a great fucking show. He goes to vote, and he comes home, and he goes, and Edith is there, right? His wife. He's like, yeah. Oh, Archie. Yeah, yeah, Edith. Yeah, what do you want? Did you vote, Archie? Yeah, I voted, Edith. But I didn't vote. There was no American on the ballot. There was Goldbaum, Schwartz, Rosenstein. Can you believe it? Three candidates, not one of them an American. Oh, great show, by the way.
Yeah, it's a time capsule for sure. Like, I was watching it yesterday, and they actually used some words. They used the word spick and nigger, and I actually had to rewind it, and I was like, did I just hear that? Like, I just you know, like, I'd never heard those words on television, really. You know what I mean? So it was just, it was weird to hear them say that. But this was the 70s, so. And that show was also on.
I tell you, that was a great show. I love that fucking show.
That show was on the same time that Three's Company was on, another one of my favorite shows, and that show was the sexual show. All in the Family was the race show, and Three's Company was the sexual show of a man and two women who weren't married and weren't dating, who were all living together. And that was also rather risque.
By the way, John Ritter, one of my favorite comics, by the way, I'm glad you brought this up, one of the most underrated physical comics. He was brilliant in that show, by the way.
Yeah, he really was. Physical comedy, he was really good at that.
And I can also recommend, there was another movie he did where he played an alcoholic. I'll find out what the name of that movie is before the show's over, and I'll post it in the chat. But yeah, John Ritter, one of my favorite comics, most underrated comic of all time. Three's Company, and by the way, that had Mr. Roper on there.
Jewish.
The Jew landlord.
Mm-hmm.
And also had Don Knotts, who took his place from the Andy Griffith show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Who's like the swinging like neighbor who thinks he's like a real type of cad and real like ladies man, but like no one's interested.
Come and knock on my door.
We've been waiting.
We'll be waiting for you. Three's Company.
Yeah, it was a good show. I mean, Suzanne Somers like demanded like a lot more money. She demanded as much as Carol O'Connor, and that's why they got rid of her, actually.
God, Suzanne Somers. Don't even get me started. You know, I've probably killed more kids than abortion clinics to that woman. No, I'm just kidding around. That's a bad joke.
She's never worn a bra on that show. Whoa. She didn't. She never wore a bra when she was on that show. It was the 70s, though.
Coming back on my door.
I like that show. I think the double entendre is just kind of funny. But yeah, John Ritter was funny as fuck. I just like the whole physical comedy thing. Like he was natural. His comedic actions with his body just seemed to be totally natural.
You know, speaking of what was her name? The blonde on a
Suzanne Somers? Chrissy Snow.
Yeah, Suzanne Somers came out with the whole book. She beat cancer twice through natural therapy and going into what you do, which is very important. Yeah. This is a great segue into your very good work that you do every week here on WTFR. Let me tell you something for those listening. I joke around. I'm an unorthodox guest for Tabitha. She normally does serious shit. I'm sorry that I'm polluting it, but I'll tell you this.
That's our break. We'll be right back, everybody.
The remedy to cure this old heart of mine. I can dream about you. If I can. I don't think I want to know a six-year-old who isn't a dreamer or a silly heart. And I sure don't want to know one who takes their student career seriously. I don't have a college degree. I don't even have a job. But I know a good kid when I see one. Because they're all good kids. Until dried-out, brain-dead skags like you drag them down and convince them they're no good. You so much as scowl at my niece or any other kid in this school and I hear about it, I'm coming looking for you. Take this quarter. Go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off your face.
A dream appears. You belong to me. Jungle when it's wet with rain. Just remember till you're home again. You belong to.
And we are back. And just hearing one of my favorite tunes. That's a wondrous tune from Patsy Cline. And yes. You were saying before the break, Mike, you were talking about how I normally talk about more serious topics. Yeah. Another person that died too young, unfortunately.
Died in a plane crash, didn't she?
I'm not sure about that. Yeah. Another just a beautiful, beautiful voice. But I think, it was a car accident, maybe?
I love Patsy Cline. I think it was a car accident.
Plane crash at age 30.
Was it really?
Yeah, March 5th, 1963 in Camden, Tennessee.
Note to self, buy a plane ticket tomorrow. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah, another person that died too early in a plane crash.
No, I'm going to die too late.
A beautiful, beautiful voice, though, for sure. Just they don't make them like that anymore.
Well, she was great. But yeah, I was saying,
I love all that old stuff.
You do great shows, Tabitha. Your shows on nutrition are very important. And for those listening, be sure to listen to all the archive shows. You know, I'm on here. I'm not her normal kind of thing going on. Okay. I admit.
Okay.
But, okay. Well,
yeah.
But I got to
tell you. What's that?
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if anyone ever wants any of my older shows and they don't want to visit the other network because they're conflicted, I totally get that and I understand that. Just send me an email and I'd be happy to send you an MP3 of some of the older shows because I did 33 solo shows whilst I was at the other network. So if anyone wants any of my older material.
Oh, my God, 33, Tabitha.
I know. My God. I know. That's why they canned me at 33.
I was right. You are a Jew agent. You did 33 shows. And then you left. It was all set up from Israel from the very beginning. 33 nutritional shows, which means that's the 33 bloodlines of the Illuminati going up to Albert Pike and the 33rd Freemasonic.
And Adam Weissop, right? All that stuff. Yep, I'm direct lineage of all those fellas, and that's why I got canned at 33. You got it.
Tabitha is actually the daughter of Albert Pike, folks.
That's right.
He actually went up north and he had offspring. She is the daughter of Albert Pike, 33rd degree Freemasonry. Why do you think she wants you to cook things that consist of lemon meringue? There has to be at least above 33rd degrees in the humidity level for a meringue to hold. Folks, this is serious. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, I do have some older shows. If anyone is desirous of hearing that material, it's similar to what I currently put out here. This is only my 11th show over at WTFR, not including the shows I've done with other people. I use that number to count my solo shows. So altogether, I've done 44 shows. I don't know if that's a gematria number or whatever, but I've done 44 solo shows. This is my 44th solo show, not including all the guest things I've done and all the podcasts and all that type of stuff.
Well, 4 plus 4, 44. 4 plus 4 equals 8. That is one above the 7, the number of completion, which means infinity. 8 is infinity in a Kabbalistic number, which means connect to Judaism, which means, Tabitha, once again, you are proving yourself.
I know.
You can't escape this, Tabitha. You are a Zionist agent who is using the kitchen as a butcher knife to destroy white nationalists.
I am. I'm using the Tabby's Tidbits podcast and the White Wellness radio show to do just that. You guys caught me. I don't want to give wonderful recipes out to people and help them live a healthy life. Nope, I'm not doing that. It's all a cover. And now you've exposed me.
Well, you know, I found out that Kyle, did you know this about Kyle from Renegade? He used to be an announcer at SeaWorld in Orlando, Florida.
No way.
No, I'm dead serious.
Oh, was that? That's weird.
Yeah, he used to do the Killer Whale Show at SeaWorld in Orlando, Florida. That is a true story.
The orca? Like the Free Willy type of shit?
Yeah, the wild orcs. He used to go, "Hello, this is Kyle from Renegade, and you are witnessing the Wild Orc Show." No, I'm just kidding around. But anyway.
Well, orc is different than orca. The orcs, when Tolkien, I've heard that Tolkien was a Philo-Semite, you know, the guy that wrote Lord of the Rings, but I always got the feeling that in those films that the orcs were representing kind of like Negroes, you know, or Dravidians or something like that.
Well, I'd hate to compare a killer whale to a black person. I have more respect for the whale. But anyway.
That whale's a fighter, isn't it?
Oh. You know what? I don't know if you remember this video a couple years back where this chick at SeaWorld was killed by the wild killer whale. You remember that? It was
stories of people getting all types of disasters from those animals. So, yeah, I've probably heard something along those lines.
You know, and I think this whale went MGTOW. You know what I mean? I think this whale couldn't take it anymore. This chick working at SeaWorld was so condescending. I watched the whole video. She was like, "Come here, you killer whale. Oh, you're so pretty. Let me give you some sardines. Oh, come here." He's like, "Fuck this." No, I'm just kidding around. But anyway.
Those things are killer, though. The fact that they have killer in their name is no joke. I mean, they're crazy. They're massive creatures. How much do those things weigh? Like a couple of tons?
Well, they weigh more than Sinead's ego. I tell you that.
Gotcha.
No, I was kidding. But anyway.
Well, I mean, the ego isn't a bad thing. And one of the things that is a gripe for me with all this New Age or Jew Cage type of stuff is they want to kind of take people's egos away. I think people should have an ego and it to be healthy, but they don't need to have their ego amputated. I think some people they wear their egos like a Pringles chip on the shoulder, and that's kind of fucked up. But they should have one, but it shouldn't be like obvious, you know?
Pringles chip. That's interesting.
Yeah, that shitty place. Remember that Mitch Hedberg joke?
Yeah,
about how
they were
going to
make tennis balls.
Exactly.
And they got potatoes instead, and they said, "Let's go with it."
Exactly. Yeah, that's the most random comic. He has the most kind of these zingers that you just kind of they're weird. He was a weird fellow.
Tinea should be caged at SeaWorld. Okay, I like that quote. That's good. That's good.
That sounds rather vegan. Yeah.
Kyle Hunt is happy that Tinea is now caged in the wild orc exhibit.
Yeah. Okay. And Tinea is a ringworm. That's what Tinea actually is. It's that ringworm virus when someone gets that telltale bullseye type of thing going on. That's what Tinea is.
No, I kind of consider Tinea as being more like a sickle cell. Right.
Oh yeah.
That that nigger disease you get in the blood. Yeah. Sickle cell, right?
Yeah, the cells are all fucked up. Yeah.
But I changed it. I call it hammer and sickle cell.
I'm seeing here that tinea is a name of a group of diseases caused by a fungus. Types of tinea include ringworm, athlete's foot, and jock itch.
Athlete's foot.
More than 3 million cases in the U.S. per year. Highly contagious fungal infection of the skin or scalp.
By the way, I just checked, Tabitha, online, the yearly cases of athlete's foot. It is over 6 million, by the way.
Wow.
It's probably over from 6 gyms. Million cases of athlete's foot.
Were those statistics written in a ballpoint pen?
Yeah, and they took their shoes and they had to put Zyklon B in them. So, wow.
Wow. But, was there a tennis court to play in after they did that?
Yeah, it was a 40 douche. No, I'm sorry.
Gotcha. As opposed to 40 love.
Is this on the love court? No, it's on the extermination court. It's 40 douche. Get it over there. Get Tinia's athlete's foot over there. God damn it. Sorry.
It's the Summer's Eve court.
6 million Summer's Eve court.
Spring breeze Summer's Eve court.
Well, that sounds even better.
I know. It sounds very, very kind of breezy and kind of NPR jazzy, right?
Oh, God. Could you imagine? You're listening to All Kikes Considered. This is the Freezy Breezy Ego 6 Million Athlete's Foot 40 Douche Court Show. Today, our special guest is Tabitha. She is a connoisseur of Jewish economics and former radio shows that have lied to her.
Pretty much. Hey, we're all in the same boat. We've all passed through the bowel that is Ren Grenade, right?
You know, I feel like I'm not in the same boat. I feel like I'm in the same float. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Barely, you know, the Titanic has sunk, and I'm on the fucking life raft. And, no, I'm just kidding around. But anyway.
The Titanic is sunk and crunk, but yes. Yeah.
We're going to hear this and go, what the fuck are they talking about?
I know. This is probably the most esoteric white wellness episode ever, but it's episode 44, and that's 8, and 8 is the number of infinity, so I had to do a groovy show for tonight. So.
Well, I'm glad you had me on for the groovy show, because I can make it real weird. I'll tell you
Yeah,
this.
No, I'm glad too.
This is like if Lenny Bruce was a Nazi, he would have done this show tonight. He would have been like... So, yeah. Feel really happy about this. I'm going to liven it up. Let me do a shot here of some scotch.
Okay.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so what have we covered thus far? We talked a little bit about the Jewish perversion of pornography and sexuality. We talked a little bit about food. We talked a little bit about race. Those are kind of the topics that we pretty much had in our non-existent skeleton for this show. What else is there that we can add to this discussion?
Maybe I should have listened to you. We should have come up with a skeleton. I'm just kidding around.
Maybe. Maybe next time we can do that.
But, no.
A free flow show is
a great show, by the way.
It really has, and I think people are going to listen back to it, and I think they're gonna smile, and their pineal gland is going to, you know, kind of flake off any calcification if there's any there. And that's the point. You know, they want to chuckle, and they want to detox, and that's what this is about. You want to have a smile on your face while you become aware. I think that's one of the best things you can offer somebody.
Well, I'll tell you this. If they can't slip off the calcification from their third eye, they're not going to know it anyway because they're fucking dumb. They're at least below 85. They're going to think this is like fucking, you know, Jeopardy.
Pretty much. But they need it.
What
you know,
is
I mean,
calcification of the pineal gland? Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
Well, maybe I can talk more about that in other broadcasts. I mean, there's so many topics. Don't you hate when somebody will say there's no white culture. I hate when people say something like that. I mean, I can go on and on. I can't ever think of being at a loss for a topic for a show. I mean, I keep a running tally of topics, and then every week, whenever I'm doing searches on certain things, I add that to my show list. I'm never at a loss for topics. I mean, how can whites be cultureless? There's zillions of things to talk about. It's just mind-boggling that someone could actually even say whites have no culture.
Well, no, our culture is the Jewish culture. The Jews have stolen our culture.
They have,
and they fucking perpetrate it like some bad rapper from 1985. They have taken everything that we have and took it as their own. We invent it. They steal it. You know, here's a good example, Tabitha. You know, everything they do and they put on TV is a white idea that they stole. And then they have connections. They put it on TV, or they say they're the inventor of it. We invented all of it.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
Yeah, pretty much. And they just take the credit for it, and they always kind of put that little twist in it that fucks with it, that makes it inauthentic, that negates its natural value. But it's so sad that a lot of people's culture is this Judaized culture, and they believe the myth that we really don't have a culture when we really do. And one of the things that I like to bring to the table on this show and also just through my own life is cooking, because one of the best ways to kind of keep your bond, keep your racial bond is through cooking.
Yep. Absolutely. Cooking is, you know, if you really think about it, you know, like the best cuisine in itself is a European Western civilization concept. There
Absolutely.
Is no cuisine anywhere else in the world. You
True.
Know, you're talking about French cuisine. You know,
the high
English
cuisine.
Mm-hmm. The high cuisine. There is
exactly.
no other cuisine in the world besides what we have created. We have perfected everything from food to science, everything. And by the
Absolutely.
Way, I don't believe in flat earth. I don't believe in flat earth niggers out there. You listening? I believe in the space program. I believe that the Aryan race can shoot to the stars, that we can go beyond this planet, and we need to, by the way. And so, yeah, we created it all. They steal it because they got the connections. They took over the press, the media, Hollywood. They took our creativity, and they ran with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole control of the press is really the most pressing issue. It truly is. I mean, when you have control of the information that comes to people, well, then you have control of everything, essentially. And that's the way it's been for quite some time. I mean, more so than ever, especially with the advent of social media. You not only have the press in regards with the Talmud Vision, the radio, and the newspaper, but now you have it with the social media. And I would even venture to say that social media is possibly more toxic than the Talmud Vision.
I would agree. I would definitely agree, because I think that social media, see, you know, George Orwell and the whole Brave New World concept envisioned a future where there would be one monolithic government outlet of propaganda that would brainwash the masses. They never could have thought of a centralized outlet that would be able to take information through a database and individualize it and then put out millions and billions of individual pieces of propaganda to each individual based upon their preferences, based upon their history on a social media site. This makes Brave New World in 1984 look like a fucking church picnic, because what they're doing is they're individualizing the propaganda. It's not one monolithic bullhorn of government propaganda coming out. It's an individualized data bank that's putting out hits to each individual based upon their preferences. This is fucking individualized, sophisticated, weaponized propaganda, you know?
Absolutely. And well said. Yeah, they want to hone in on every subgroup, every clique, every subset they can, and just full force it, regardless of what it is. No matter what you prescribe to, they've got the answer for it, and they have the program that's going to direct you into the wrong direction. And that's pretty much, I mean, there's so many different cliques and subsets these days, more so than ever before. But no matter what it is, they have an answer for it. And it's basically to walk off a cliff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the whole key, is that I don't even think in their worst nightmares they could have envisioned the individualized propaganda that really is. You know, have you ever seen the documentary called Hacked?
I don't think I have.
For those listening, I would recommend this documentary. Watch the documentary Hacked. It's very good. It's about, I can't remember the name of the company, but it was a company out of England that
Cambridge Analytica? Is it that?
Yes, Cambridge Analytica. Absolutely.
The Great Hack is what it's called. The Great Hack 2019 documentary. Yes. Okay. Go on.
Brilliant.
Yes, what were you going to say?
Brilliant film, by the way. This is the future of campaigns.
Yeah, definitely. I heard that this was wasn't Trump getting a lot of his speeches through this Cambridge Analytica thing?
No, the whole Trump election was won through Cambridge Analytica, but Obama's election was run through Cambridge Analytica as well before that. Okay.
Okay.
So, okay, this is all, you know, they're all part of the same shit, you know. But
of course.
But what's interesting is how Obama was the first to use the Cambridge Analytica concept to win an election, and it changed the course of elections, because rather than relying, I used to work on political campaigns, instead of relying on mailers, we used to have mailers, and we used to have door knockers, we used to have signs and strategic locations based upon traffic count on certain roads, that kind of thing. All that's gone. It's all based now on social media and website traffic. You know, and if you can get this info and propaganda on certain sites at peak moments based on traffic, this is the whole ballgame. And that's where Cambridge Analytica came in. And it's very interesting.
Yeah, that makes good sense, because it seems like whatever your click or your bent is, they aggregate your social media platform for that, regardless of what it is, based on what you like, what you look at, and they're kind of like aggregating your reality. So kind of closing the book on the social media is a bold, brave, and courageous activity, as opposed to the when they say you're bold and brave for having, you know, pride or mutilating your genitals, which is not bold and brave, but really just giving the finger or turning a blind eye to that, that's bravery.
Well, not only that, but not only are they getting your voting habits and your political affiliation, but at the same time, in that whole experience, they're getting your consumption habits.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first time in American history, your vote is not secret. They're coming into the voting booth and they're allowing the multinational corporations to come in. So they know not only your bent politically, but they know your consumption habits. And then they can tailor your consumption habits through commercialism to push you to your political tilt to go a certain way. It's never been done before. And this is why it is changing American politics for the worse. And it's only going to get worse. But it's very interesting, by the way.
Yeah, it really is. And it's crazy how much this digital world has changed everything for better and for good. I mean, in a lot of way, a lot of us have woken up to the pertinent issues in the world based on having this platform, but this platform also operates as a way to kind of control us and pull us back into the web.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it really does. Well, we have about 3 minutes left on our broadcast. That went by rather briskly, I would say.
Yeah, I think it went pretty good.
Yeah. Anything else you want to mention in the last couple of moments that we have left?
Yeah. It's that get off social media. Facebook for about, I have not been on Facebook for 3 years. I'm not on any social media site except for Twitter, only to promote my podcast and my shows. Same. And I would recommend that you do not fuck around on these social media sites. They are a data mining operation. They are bad. And if you really want to be a political outsider or a renegade, not to mention their site, I don't mean like that, but I mean a true political renegade, don't participate in their apps and their sites. Just drop out. Exactly. It'll drive them crazy. It'll drive them crazy because they're relying on you to stay tuned in and to stay in their site so they can data mine and sway you for not only the corporate process, but the political process. Thanks, Tabitha, so much.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. And you're absolutely right with what you say. And there are ways for people to connect with other people. Like, you don't have to say, oh, I can't connect with people because I don't have those social medias. Of course you can. I connect with a lot of people, and I don't use those things anymore. I just have the Twitter, and I use, you know, Skype. I do this show. I do the little Tabby's Tidbits thing. So there's multiple ways to connect with other humans. And Shield Maiden is saying here in the chat that she wants me to plug my new recipe. I just did a Tabby's Tidbits yesterday, and I posted a recipe for this stew. It's called Khichdi. It's a easy to digest stew. It's got mung beans and rice and a couple of vegetables. And I talk a little bit in the Tidbit podcast, as well as in the article, about the sacral chakra. And that's one of the chakras that our enemies are trying to shut down because they want to pervert and divert our true Aryan sexuality. They want us to be doing release-based activities, sodomy, you know, things like that, when we should really be paying attention to the real male-female sacred bond. If someone doesn't have a partner, they can bond with themselves and practice solo tantra. That's an option too. And to do yogic exercises that expand that area of the body. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say there. Anything else you want to say, Mike?
No, I think you summed it up.
Whoa, okay.
Well, I don't want to experience solo tantra. I don't want to do that.
I prefer to experience the duo aspect myself too, but if case someone isn't, I want to offer all the options for everybody. I always want to be able to give an option for everybody regardless of where they're at in their journey. I think that's important. I mean, the sacred bond of the true tantra between male and female, that's the most sacred aspect, but it doesn't mean that someone can't explore their own sacred essence on their own. And I'm not just talking about someone fiddling themselves. I'm talking about just kind of getting to know their spiritual essence. You get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. That's our show. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. Albert Camus. Albert Camus was a journalist, editor and editorialist, playwright and director, novelist and author of short stories, political essayist and activist, and arguably, although he came to deny it, a philosopher. He ignored or opposed systemic philosophy, had little faith in rationalism, asserted rather than argued many of his main ideas, presented others in metaphors, was preoccupied with immediate and personal experience, and brooded over such questions as the meaning of life in the face of death.
A dream appears, you belong to me. I'll be so alone. See? the jungle when it's wet with rain. Just remember till you're home again.